And again.
Yep.
Tammy, this is the infamous trustee.
District 14. So agenda paper 6. The interpretation committee received a request to clarify the application of the requirement of IFRIC 14 regarding the availability of refunds from a defined benefit plan managed by an independent trustee. The committee discussed this issue at its May meeting. The committee noted that the fact that the surplus could be decreased or extinguished by uncertain future events may affect the measurement of the surplus, but not its existence of a right itself. At the meeting in May, the committee tentatively agreed to propose an amendment and requested further analysis. In accordance with the committee's decision in May, we analyzed the steps in IS 19 and IFRIC 14 that covered when and how an entity should consider the trustee's powers to augment benefits, to wind up the plan, and to purchase annuities in this specific pattern. In short, as a result of the analysis, we think that the asset in this specific case could be a non-contingent asset, but its amount is uncertain, consistently with the tentative decision in May. As shown in Appendix A, we propose amendment to paragraphs 11 to 13 of IFRIC 14 to clarify some points noted in the analysis. We also noted and had a concern that the current guidance might result in ignoring the possibility that an entity may not realize any economic benefits at any point because the current measurement of guidance is silent on the case that the amount of a refund is dependent on how much the surplus will be put to alternative uses at the discretion of the trustee. Consequently, we suggest adding paragraph 15A of IFRIC 14 as shown in Appendix A. If an entity expects the trustee will use the surplus partially or fully at some point, the fact would be reflected in the amount of an asset in our proposal. In other words, no asset would be recognized in our proposal if an entity expects no future economic benefits available at all. We would like to ask whether the committee agree with the staff analysis and recommendation.
Sue, you seem eager to get in on this one.
I don't know if eager is the right word, but I just wanted to comment on the observations from the small group meetings with ISB members, particularly given that this is, just looking at this, a potential annual improvement, which I think has sort of got at least an implication of not being controversial. I think that for some board members, including myself, we do have the concerns expressed in paragraph 48, and I think that the paper gives the impression, which may be true for some board members but not others, that as long as it was board members, if this was brought to us as an annual improvement. And I just thought it would be maybe helpful to throw that out there before the discussion starts, which is why I was eager to get in, because I think at a minimum the board members would need to be convinced why paragraph 12 in IFRIC 14 shouldn't be looked at very closely in this situation.
Okay, with that admonition in mind, Laurence.
I was very pleased when I read that paragraph 48 to see that I was not alone having the same thinking, that if indeed someone else can take out all the economic benefits embodied in the surplus, for me, this questions the existence of the asset itself and the control over the asset. And I don't see how you can demonstrate you meet the recognition criteria for an asset. For me, this issue is not one of measurement, it is one of recognition. Moreover, if the Interpretations Committee still continues to go along the view that it's a measurement question, not a recognition question, I still don't understand those additions made to paragraph 11 and that paragraph 15A, because I don't see how past history can help you predict what is going to be the future behavior of trustees. And if you have no past history, what are you going to do? So I do believe that it's preferable to treat this issue as a recognition issue, control over the economic benefits flowing from the surplus, rather than to try to deal with it as a measurement issue.
Tony?
Yeah, I think, like Laurent, I think there's a deeper issue here, and I really sense this is not an annual improvement, because it's almost as if the staff did an analysis of where the standard leads you, got to the end and thought, we don't like the answer. And I think Laurence and Sue are saying they don't like the answer that it gives you if you do the analysis by following it through the standard, which suggests to me that the question here is slightly different. And I think if I look at the way 15A is written, then I think, well, actually it's inconsistent with a couple of parts of the standard itself. So paragraph 89 says that actuarial assumptions do not reflect future benefit changes. So that's sort of telling you, as part of your measurement, to ignore what might happen in terms of future changes in benefits. BC 102, addressing this issue, said that the measurement assumptions were very subjective and therefore suggested that the limit on the surplus should reflect available refunds or reductions in contributions. And so I'm not sure that writing in a paragraph about measurement addresses the tension between where the standard seems to be directing you at the moment, which I have to say I understand all of the concerns, but it is actually directing you towards recognizing the asset. And it will be inconsistent with some of what's written here to go down the route of 15A. But I completely understand the concerns people have that there's something in it that might not be all right. So I think there's a broader issue to be addressed and thinking about what's the conceptual justification for not recognising an asset based on entitlement to that refund, if indeed that was the date on which the plan was wound up. So I think there's some more analysis about the conceptual basis, and it's always difficult, I think, in IAS 19, trying to tie that back to the conceptual framework, because I'm not sure that an unvested pension liability necessarily meets the definition of a liability either. So I think there's a whole series of things that I can't see how we can go ahead with this, but we need to address the concerns that Laurence and Sue have raised. And I also think we need to, if we're going down this route of not recognising the asset for whatever reason, we need to think about the interaction with the minimum funding requirement. So if you don't book the asset for this reason, do you have to book the liability for any minimum funding requirement? And then how would this interact with the recognition of the consequences of a settlement? If that surplus was then used to pay annuities, would this accounting mean that suddenly we don't account for the settlement loss in the income statement? So that's a very long way of saying, I don't think this works. It just fails to address the concerns that Laurence and Sue have from a conceptual basis and the interaction with the remainder of IFRIC 14. I think it just needs to be thought through just in the context, conceptually, a little bit more detail.
Conceptually in pension accounting.
I understand that as a sort of a starting point. But
Reinhardt and Andrew?
I have, my concerns were really very similar to those expressed by Laurence and Sue. I guess personally, when I look at IFRIC 14, when it talks about having an unconditional right to a refund, I couldn't see how an entity would have an unconditional right to a refund assuming gradual settlement if the trustee, unless it could control that you have gradual settlement, if the trustee could wind up at any point in time how would you have an unconditional rate to be able to settle gradually or meet the other criteria in paragraph 11? And so conceptually, I was having difficulty understanding kind of the basis for where the proposed amendments were going to.
Andrew?
I share the same concerns. The analysis has shifted the problem from one of doesn't unconditional right exist to one of measurement of the asset. We've measured the asset under IAS 19, taking into account legal and constructive obligations and minimum funding obligations. But I think we just do need to confront the issue of whether this trustee right to enhance benefits in the future means we have an asset or don't have an asset, rather than trying to have a second bite at the kind of measurement, so to speak. And I share Laurence's concern. I think it was about the operationality of making that measurement. We're trying to predict future behaviour in a unique situation. The ability of the trustees to enhance benefits will be influenced, for example, by whether market fluctuations take that asset away in the future. I don't think there's going to be any reliable basis to remeasure the asset at this second stage.
John, and is it Kaz there in the corner, that or Charlotte, whichever? John?
I share Tony's concerns. I mean, I think this points to a much bigger question. I do think that IFRIC 14 gets you to the recognition if you have the right to the refund under any of the three situations in paragraph 11, and then it tells you about measuring the economic benefit available at the amount of the surplus the amount that you have a right to receive. So I think that the accounting under 14 gets you to the recognition of the surplus. I am concerned at introducing the notion that you don't have a right, somehow you don't have an asset because somebody can in the future affect the amount that you pay. I mean, lots of people can affect the amount of the surplus in the future. Governments can change legislation, tax authorities can change the tax requirements. I mean, I don't think anybody would say that all of that somehow is factored into the fact that you don't, or is relevant to the fact you don't have recognition today. So I'm quite concerned about, is it only the trustee's power to affect that surplus that's relevant to its measurement, or is it anybody's power to affect that surplus? I think there's much deeper conceptual questions, because what impact does the conclusion that the trustee, that you don't have an asset because of the trustee's power, have where you have a minimum funding requirement and the recognition of a liability? It would suggest that in those situations you should actually be providing a liability for those minimum funding requirements, because you have no ability to control whether you have a refund or not.
Earl?
I share lots of the concerns raised by Laurence. It doesn't feel to me like it's an asset that the entity has control over. And I think the fact that the trustee can decide what to do with the surplus to the degree of reducing it to zero feels like it should be the same answer that they can approve the surplus. And until the trustee's approved, it doesn't feel to me that the entity has a right. And it may be that through measurement you get to the same answer, that you reduce your surplus to zero, but it just feels like an odd way of doing it.
Okay. We didn't come to this. We've talked about this issue once before, right?
We have, yes.
And so the staff is bringing back the brief they were given the last time we talked about it. And now, having seen the baby, to use the expression again, we've decided it's ugly. That's fine. This issue is either, before I let our regulators in, the difficulty I'm having is understanding whether this issue is much bigger than it looks, which seems to be Tony and John and others, or much smaller than it looks, because are there many jurisdictions in which this power of the trustee actually exists? I've only heard it described as in the United Kingdom. So are there other jurisdictions in which, I can't imagine a U.S. trustee having, nobody would give up that.
Not that I'm aware
of. Somebody down there wanted to come in on this, just not that you're aware of it being an issue?
I didn't want to come in.
Oh, somebody pushed a button, so we'll cut it. Okay.
No, I just wanted to say that if you consider that it's not a problem with the recognition of that item, it's then a problem of measurement and a problem in terms of enforceability. I think the revised wording in 15A will make it very difficult to audit and to enforce. It's very, very judgmental. So that's the concern that I wanted to express tonight.
Yeah, recognizing that, if we come to the conclusion of zero, relatively straightforward, and I understand that some would reach that conclusion. Laurence?
You asked about where is it prevalent. UK definitely I've heard about. I was questioning whether maybe in Netherlands there may be cases, but I have not heard so many other jurisdictions where this issue has popped up.
Okay. Michael, did you want to go?
I was just going to say, UK is the one territory where we've heard that it is significant, and that it is significant in the UK. So whilst it may be limited to some extent to one country, it's quite significant within that country.
Okay. All right, let me see if I can summarize views here. What I have heard the most is, having looked at this issue again, my sense of a majority of those who spoke was that it is not an asset. It doesn't meet the criteria for recognition, which makes measurement irrelevant. Can I see a show of hands of those who now hold that view? Okay. Don't need to count them, it's more than enough. 10?
10.
Okay. Now, second question. Does IFRIC 14 get you there, or do we need to do something in addition? My sense is that people thought looking at IFRIC 14 had already got them there. Tony, you?
I think it's in IFRIC 14's
interpretation of IS 19, and I don't think the guidance in IS 19 gets you to that answer. I understand why people feel uncomfortable with the notion that if someone can just take it away, I don't get it, but the company actually controls its right to have whatever is there. And that's the model that IS 19 is built on. And so I completely understand why people are fussed by it. I'm just concerned that we're going with an answer that makes us feel comfortable rather than an answer that is supported by what the literature says. And that's why I said I think John had the same feeling. If we want to get there, I think we need just to think very carefully about how we support that in an interpretation of IS 19, therefore in the context of the guidance that's in IS 19.
Point taken. That's why I raised the question.
I think we would need to clarify situations where you have a liability in relation to a minimum funding requirement, and whether it's just the trustee's power or everybody else's power to alter the terms of the plan in the future to remove the surplus.
There has to be some limit to that. I was discussing this with a couple of board members yesterday. Certainly, a government always has the power to expropriate any asset, either eminent domain or whatever governmental power they have, and that doesn't change usually our view of whether or not this is my asset. So it has to be something bigger than that. Laurence?
Maybe the difference with government expropriation and so on is that here it's written in the contractual agreement that the trustees have such a power. So it's closer.
An obvious point, yeah.
And it goes back to the enforceability side that I was referring to, because with taxes you have tax regulations you can look at. Here it's just the behavior of the trustees, and they have this right to use that money for other purposes.
I'm open for suggestions. Where do we need to take this? I've heard a couple of people say that IFRIC 14 standing alone or with 19 won't get you an answer. Or worse, that it gets you an answer that the majority of this group doesn't like. what do we have to do?
In a sense, it's something that's a bit deeper than an annual improvement to IFRIC 14. That if, and then I'm not saying I would necessarily support this idea, but if what the committee feels is that this should not be recognised as an asset, is that a specific exception to the way the rest of the standard would drive you? And if that's the case, so be it. But I guess my sense of the way forward is if the committee feels that, and I think there was a show of hands, was 10 out of 14 of us did feel that the asset shouldn't be recognised in the first place, then is the next step for the staff to think about how that is articulated, or does it have to be an exception? And then just to deal with the, if it's an exception, the critical thing with exceptions is always the scope. As John says, is it just the trustee's right or what else? So maybe the staff could think about that and to where they next need to go with it, but also think about particularly the interaction with the minimum funding requirement. Because one of the consequences of doing this would be not only to take an asset off the books, just the mechanics of IS 14 plonks a liability on as well. And I just want to make sure everybody understands that that's what you'd be doing when there's a minimum funding requirement.
I think you meant to say IFRIC 14.
What did I just call it?
IFRS 14.
No.
Okay. May I suggest then, and I'm trying to pick up on the comment that Laurence made, the default case is that IFRIC 14 tells me what I do with surpluses. Sorry? That IFRIC 14, in conjunction with IAS 19, takes me in the direction of what I need to do. The question is, when I, as an employer, have given up by granting an authority to a somebody I don't control, a trustee, does that change the answer? And that's the context that we need to discuss it in. And again, let's figure out what the answer is and then argue about the vehicle later. But any objection to that approach? Okay. You'll see it back next time. Charlotte, Kaz, did you want to come in on this? Okay.